This is the third in a series of little podcasts where I eventually get to discuss that amazing material that no one's seen. A material that people are there but no one has actually seen, called dark matter. So we're starting off on the first ones about basically the school introduction of Kepler's laws, how you can actually use the orbital period and radius to infer what a mass is. And then, so we've got to find out what mass is and the gravitational effect of that. That's where we're going to. The second one is we looked at different ways of telling mass through a telescope. You look up at a telescope at night, and if you can suddenly see double images, you know that there's gravitational lensing. If you can see the spectra of a star, you can tell how that star is moving, so the speed which it's orbiting or a pair, so that gives you back to Kepler's law, or you can even see the gravitational redshift. Now this time I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the fundamental science that you need to explore or understand or perceive this dark matter. So we haven't seen it, and the only way that we can actually see it is through a feeling and a look. So I don't know quite how I can explain. You are listening to it, and if you've stick in there, you've been educated via podcasts. You may have learned it through different things, reading articles, or this may spur you to go into the internet and study it a bit more. So I think it's more basically getting a bit more education is adding a bit more depth or perceptive depth into what you're seeing out there. So I suppose I don't want to be too insulting. Like a cat standing in front of a TV screen will just see moving pictures. It won't actually be able to put it all together, what's going on. Whereas humans who've got much more acclimatized, more information about what's going on can build up a picture. Or I suppose similarly, if you're going through the bush or this is the outback and stuff like that, and you see a bent twig and a stick which has been sheared due to pressure on it, or you know, just the nature of trees, you can actually build a picture of a person or an animal which has been through the area, whereas someone who's just lived in the city, got out of their car, walked around the place, won't be able to see it. And so you're getting a bit of science craft by listening to it. Just to, in summary, again, it's Kepler's law, orbiting, a bit more science, and this time we're going to go into a bit more depth on certain aspects, two aspects. They're more science aspects, and they're linked together by imagining the surface of a star, and that's obviously going to give us mass and stuff like that. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. You can hear birds chirping in the background, and we've got these large microphones, an array of stereo microphones, which listen for chirps in space, very small chirps in space, and that again allows us to listen to the effect of gravitational events. And we're we're hunting gravity and trying to work it all out to actually say, look, there's some other matter we don't know about. So I'm just trying to link that in. One of the things that I want to possibly start off with is two things I want to start off with, and that is the idea of a hollow star, and the other one is just stars in general. I'll start off with a hollow star. So imagine a hollow star. That is a star. It's got a very intense gravitational field. It's just made out of a shell of very dense material. I can't explain how it is, but very dense. Look, we can't explain how it is, but bear in mind, this is this hollow star thing is not something to laugh at. This is the reality. You are living in something very similar to this. So I suppose I don't want to be rude and say shut up and listen, but imagine a hollow star like our own. except all the density, the density on the inside has been pulled to the outside. For some reason, it's generating heat. It's hollow in the inside, so rather than being super fluffy and light on the outside, it's really dense. It's a hollow car. Imagine sort of like the Earth. Someone's gone bananas and mound the entire centre of the Earth. Now, what will happen is, let's look at the gravitational field as you come up to it. So from afar, your hollow star, which has been hollowed up or expanded up, so the core has been pushed out to the shell. There's still some mass, and one which has been left alone. The two stars will appear identical from the outside. They'll have the same mass profile. So essentially, the amount of mass in a particular direction that you set out a ray in a particular direction, the amount of mass you pull up will be the amount of force that you're pulled in that direction. Now, in the hollow star, you've got a lot more mass at the shell, nothing, and then at the farther shell. Overall, that mass will be the same. So if you're orbiting both these stars, a hollow star and your real star, will look exactly the same. They feel exactly the same, and there's some sort of maths there where it's called integration, and that's for a particular angle. An angle or direction of force, you look at the different angles, slightly different angles, and you go, say, 0.1 degree each, change the angle, and then the amount of force from a metre, 2 metres out, and you add all that, a massive calculation. Now, fortunately, there's some maths tricks to do all those sums. So that's summing something over a range of parameters or dimensions. Is called integration. And so for both these stars, our hollow star and our normal star, they've got the same gravitational field from the outside. In fact, you couldn't tell, there is certain ways that you can tell, but you couldn't tell that the star was hollow just from the gravitational force. That is, they've got the same mass, but the hollow star, the density has been hollowed from the inside and it's been pushed out into the shell. Now, it's a little bit different if you actually were to actually go inside the star. So, as you go inside the star, a normal star, the gravity will peak at the surface and slowly reduce as you go further and further in until you're at the very centre of the star. There'll be no gravity whatsoever. So, as you go in, the surface will... surface, say it's 20 times Earth gravity, it will be at 20 times Earth gravity. You go in 10% of the star, it will drop down to 18% of the 18 times Earth's gravity. In fact, if it's a uniform density, it's a bit like a big ball of cheese, so to speak. It's not like that. It will have a linear drop, so there'll be an inverse square law up to the surface of the star, and then it will drop as a line, as a ruler line. You take your ruler from the gravity field at the surface, and at the core it goes to zero, and you just draw a line. It will be linearly decrease. Now, of course, in actual stars, it doesn't do a linear decrease. It does a bit more of a plunging decrease because the density increases. So it's a bit hard to think. But in a hollow star, that's it's been hollowed out and emptied, or hollowed out and pushed by the matter being pushed to the edge. As soon as you drop into that hollow space, the gravity field turns to nothing. It turns to zero. There is no gravity field whatsoever. You can just float around in there as though there's no space whatsoever. And the reason is that if you sum at any angle, if you are close to the surface, a small cone angle that you're looking will only cover a small volume of surface, even though it's really close to you. And inverse square, looking at the opposite direction, you've just floated in, looking in the opposite direction to the far distant wall, that same angle cone, although it's further away, will be... inverse square will have a squared proportional to the square of the distance an area there. And so that means that when you're inside, the gravitational forces add up equally. So inside your hollow star, the gravity is, gravitational field or force on you is zero, because it cancels out directly. And this is a bit of a reason why in your normal star it drops down linearly, but in this case, a hollow star, there's no gravitational field. So what happens is you go from zero, and then all of a sudden, as you move out, the gravitational field begins to increase. So that's a piece of science to take away and think about. I don't know if there's an internet site to look at it. You can do this if you do basic university, I suppose, integration and maths and looks about that. But that's a take-home message, that if I'm in a hollow sphere of mass, the gravitational field is low, but it suddenly starts to increase as I go out past that hollow surface. That's something to bear in mind. Now, I promised that I would do two things, and that is look at another important measure of mass. So that's an effect to put away. I've given you an idea now that I can look out through a telescope, and all of a sudden, in three dimensions, my computers can start to sum up the mass which is out there. They can start to look at a pair of binary stars, sum up the masses, look at a split image, a double image of a galaxy, sum up the mass, look at another spectra, and start to work out the mass. And there's certain stars where it's a certain brightness and a certain colour, it takes a little bit of care, but the computer can actually work this out. I'm going to tell you how it does it. We're going in another direction here. I have a star with a certain fixed absolute brightness, so many watts, so to speak. So it's a star, and I think the stars are standardized that at a distance of 3.2 light years, it's got a standard brightness, and then logarithmically for that standard distance, if it's 10 times less bright, it's one order of magnitude lower. So if it's 23, it's order of brightness, absolute brightness. If I had it at this distance of one parsec, this star is one on one with 23 zeros. It's very dim. However, if this star is a very bright star, it could be 10 times brighter than our star, and so it's got a correspondingly greater number, and that's absolute brightness. Now, if we bring a star much closer to us, it'll be brighter still. So our sun has an apparent magnitude of an incredibly bright star at this one parsec distance, brightness and relative brightness. So relative brightness is what I see with my eyes, but if I start knowing distances, I can account for the distance and give you the absolute wattage, or absolute power output of a star. So the absolute power output of the star is one thing. I can actually also tell you the surface temperature of a star by the colour. So basically, if you turn on a radiator, a hot wire radiator or your toaster, as the thing begins to heat up, it goes from dull red to slightly hotter red. And if you've got a torch or a lamp, as you turn it on and off, you can see it go through this curve where it's actually broadcasting the temperature. Now, what this means is that the hotter it is, the more efficiently it produces light. What this means is that if I see a very bright red star, it's got a huge radius, and if I see a very bright UV star, it's got a very small radius. That is, because it's going blue, it's producing a lot more light, it's a lot more powerful light. It's got a smaller radius. So we can actually tell the radius of a star out in space, even though it's a point, by knowing its distance and knowing its colour. There's a bit of maths in there. Now, and that gives a radius, it's a sphere, gives us the volume of the star. So I can look out in space in a telescope, and if you can imagine floating augmented reality, I can start to, above a star system or an area, I can start to put masses in, and then above stars I can actually tell its volume. It's a bit of a science experiment you do in a lab. You work out that it works in a lab. It works over a distance, and it works into deep space. This ability to measure the colour, the overall colour of a star, and its distance and brightness gives me the volume of the star. This, unfortunately, just gives us the volume, and we're after the mass. And so we have to do a bit of long-term statistics to work out why what is the mass of a particular colour star of a particular radius. And this is where we come up to something called the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram. And this is basically a catalogue of every known star, where we plot the colour of the star versus its brightness. We can get a very hot star, and we can say it can be any radius we want. But it turns out that the radius is linked to the colour. There's actually only a line, or generally a line or slope, called what we call the main sequence here. And what's going on here is that the more massive a star is, the greater the extent, and this is the size of it. So a lot of people, when they're doing this descriptive astronomy, just skip this bit. So a more massive star has a larger fraction of the star in the plasma is in a state, a restful state, called the radiative zone. So the plasma is very still. If you were to watch it, it would be the stillest light possible above it. And then there's a sudden transition to the convective zone, where it's really churning away in the last 10% or 1% of the star. The bigger the star is, the smaller relative fraction it is. And this creates a magnetic field, which creates basically a shaving, paring down effect. So a very massive star has a very efficient way of burning its surface down, so the diffusing layer, obscuring layer of gas is blown away, and you can see deeper in temperature wise into the star. So very large stars have a burning mechanism which burns in, and you can see deeper into them. So more massive stars tend to be bluer stars, and we know all this information to give us a general guide to the mass of stars. And so he concludes two bits of information, or the first bit of information is I'm now prying you up to this phenomena to say, look, if I'm walking through space and the gravitational field suddenly increases, I've just walked out of a holosphere. That's the first one. The second one is that although there's, if you imagine that you switch on your computers first off, and it starts analysing the star data coming in. So it analyses orbits and analyses spectra, and it starts to get a few precision masses out there from the actual spectral stuff. And then, using a bit more clever maths, it is able to assign masses all over the sky. So every star you see there, a computer can actually tell you how much mass it is. There are some stars which aren't binary stars, they're just sitting by themselves, and all it's giving you, the only clue is they're giving you how far away they are. We can now tell how far stars away, there's several methods, and we can see what colour they are. And through a series of processes, understanding how stars work, we can use this to actually tell you pretty precisely what the mass of that star is. And so we're ending this story here is that you've been sort of taken aside and saying, before you look up in that telescope or you look at the star chart, know now that in the last 50 years we've made this progress such that we can tell you the colour. We've got these new instruments which measure the spectra of stars and the distance of stars, and we've got new mathematical models. And for every star in the sky we see tonight, or see it any night out there, we can start to calculate the total mass out there, this augmented reality. You can sort of imagine augmented reality walking around in a supermarket, or it puts the dollar signs above every item, and what's a bargain. Or you're walking around doing security at an airport, and with augmented reality, and above each individual the computers are working out, as this person is walking too quickly for their age, there's something wrong here. They can actually start to work things out. And of course there are these oddball stars which still get the scientists scratching, but we tend to aim in on them and start to build a model of what's going on. And that's really not the start of things, but what I want to say to you is that we've now have an augmented reality, virtual reality, where we can look up at the sky at night, look around at the universe, and start measuring the mass, weighing the universe. And this is where this and having a bit of maths coming together, we are going to see the unseeable, which is dark matter. So this is a podcast in the middle of other podcasts. It's not the best one, but it's sort of a necessary one to bring everyone along. Just again to summarise, it's the what if I fell into a hollowed star? What would happen there? And now, are we bright enough to actually look up a star at night? Are we bright enough to actually work out how massive it is? And the answer is yes. There's things where the star is actually telling you how massive it is, but there's other instances where we can run computer models from its colour and its absolute brightness. And ones that we do know from the actual, it's telling us, we can, and they're a certain colour, we can use the information of that and map it across and say, ha-ha, I know how much you weigh. And so we're now in a place of getting the theoretical understanding to work out what's happening in the galaxy, and the actual scientific data is pouring into us. So whereas the ancients used to look up and admire a spot of light, it's telling us more and more information. That's all for this podcast. Thanks for listening, and in the meantime, keep on doing science.